Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. The mission of the Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Welcome to the Reasonable Voices Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, and this afternoon I have two wonderful guests. One I've known for a couple of years, and one I just met a few months ago, Arish Ramakrishnan. Did I get it, Arish?
Yep.
And
Arish.
Very good. And Carolyn Murdoch, both graduates of the University of Virginia, and now writers and producers of a funny new screenplay called Our Thing. How are you, Carolyn?
I'm doing great.
I'm great. I'm glad to have you both on the show. I want to mention, too, before I go too far, that both Carolyn and Arish co-wrote Our Thing with a third writer who could not be on the show today, Patrick Duffy. So we give a shout-out to Patrick, who probably Arish will refer to as Duffy during the show. But a little about Carolyn. She's a film actress on the West Coast, known most notably for her work in Mac Daddy and The Lovers. I am, yes, I am you, are everyone, and Navel Gazer, I shudder to think. Anyway, and her co-screenwriter and friend, Arish, is a designer, engineer, entrepreneur, and co-owner of Elegant Solutions, and now, along with Patrick Duffy and Carolyn Murdoch, the co-screenwriter of Our Thing. Good afternoon, you guys. I am so excited, as I guess you can tell, about talking with you. I want to say I first met Carolyn on the set of Our Thing, but Arish I met in person on the Reasonable Voice radio interview about, it was at least 2 years ago, right, Arish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think 3 years ago, almost.
3 years ago, wow. Well, yeah. At the time, I bring that up because at the time, I've had so many times in my life someone say to me, just as things are finishing, by the way, and then something follows that becomes quite an event in my life. And this is what happened. Arish said after the radio interview, by the way, I'm writing this screenplay. And I went, oh, you know, would you like to see it sometime? And I said, sure. And that was it. And of course, fast forward, 2015, Arish sends me an email, he's got this play, and sends me 39 pages to read, and of course I love, as Carolyn and Arish know, I love learning new things, but also in New York City I produced and directed a lot of new work, so I'm always excited to read new work, but not always as pleased as I was with Our Thing. I laughed all the way through my first reading of it. My wife thought I was going crazy. And then next, some more emails, some more meeting, we talk, whatever. And I end up not only directing what we ended up calling a mini pilot of the movie, from which Arish and Carolyn and Duffy will extract a requested, that's an important word, a requested trailer. But I'm in the movie, of course, playing the bad guy. What do you expect? But so, Carolyn and Arish, that's all I have to say for the time being. How did this screenplay collaboration between the two of you and Duffy begin?
Beautiful. So how do you think that was? It started with, you know, sure. So I've been writing screenplays as a hobby for 5 to 7 years now. You know, just on and off, I used to write small scenes here and there, more so than full length, and then starting in my third year, so back in 2010, I started writing full length screenplays for movies, and then after graduating, I decided to tackle a TV show. And Patrick Duffy and I have actually been writing together for, I'd say, 5 years now, basically since my third year.
Uh-huh.
So we've had a lot of different screenplays done between the two of us and kind of workshopped. In fact, the screenplay that I first approached you about, Marcello, was a screenplay that Duffy and I wrote before we met Carolyn. And we're actually in the process of getting a table reading set up. Always have a lot of different ideas I'm working on, but I actually saw a video that Carolyn was in early 2014, and I also saw a piece in the UVA alumni newsletter about her,
mm-hmm.
Kind of describing what she's doing out in Los Angeles. So I decided to reach out. Of course, life got in the way, and 10 months later, I remembered, oh, I was supposed to reach out to this person. Who I don't know.
Yes.
So I sent her a random email through her website, and then we got in touch. Actually, it was really, really good timing on my part, because we got to meet about 5 days later, because she was in town for a photo shoot in Charlotte. And we met, we worked on a smaller project together, and kind of hit it off, and then Duffy and I decided to bring her in on this larger idea we had, which later manifested itself as our thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we started writing that, November, Carolyn, is that about right?
And
from there, just kind of took a life of its own.
Now, Carolyn, I mentioned that you are an actress on the West Coast, but you sort of hail from Tennessee, and that's part of our story, actually. But tell us about that.
I am originally from Nashville, Tennessee, so I have bumped around quite a lot. So I'm from Nashville. I went to the University of Virginia,
yes.
And then after graduation, I came pretty much here to the West Coast.
And how's that going? I mean, because it sounded quite exciting, actually, when the few moments we had to actually ask each other about our professional careers while shooting our thing. But how's it going for you?
It's going well. You know, it's definitely an adjustment. It's nothing like Charlottesville out here. But I've had some lucky moments. I've been in a few commercials and got a great spokesperson job for a company that allowed me to stay out here and pay my bills, which is great,
yes.
And keep doing my screenwriting and acting as well. So things have been going well. Things are definitely going well. It's definitely some projects have finally come to fruition, just like our thing, and it's an exciting time for sure.
Absolutely. And, I just think timing is just everything. With us coming together, I mean, like I said, the whole thing and meeting artists and having him just sort of mention it in passing, and then perhaps something 2 to 3 years later, an email saying, oh, by the way, I'd like you to look at the screenplay. And I was excited from the beginning. But tell me how, I don't know, Adish, it was, I know, in part because of Carolyn's schedule and her geography. But talk to us, tell the people who don't know, how was the scheduling? How did that come about? Obviously, you guys are good at coordinating and time management. Being UVA grads, you had to be to become a grad. Was it just born out of necessity?
So it's partially born out of necessity. Partially, I'm a stickler for a good plan that comes together. So
yes.
I'm actually working on my project manager professional certification right now.
Yes.
So with my company, Elegant Solutions, I'm the project manager. So it comes down to a lot of double dipping, but not in terms of using the same thing to get too fast done, but rather setting up meetings in the same spot,
mm-hmm.
or setting up meetings in the same geographic area, and having the chips fall in a particular order so that one event leads to the next. And in this case, you know, I went out to LA in March. I got to stay with Carolyn, and he kind of took me on the tour of LA, and we had a lot of really good meetings. Cultivated some interest, and there was a request more. And then when I got back to Charlottesville, maybe 2 weeks after my trip in mid-late March, we made the decision, okay, we're going to get everything together and shoot a pilot. And then the weekend of the show, so the weekend that anyways a lot of people are going to be in town, already finding out the possible, and Carolyn had plans to be in Tennessee around then for else. So we trampled a bit. It was definitely not easy to get all the timing to work, but we had a casting call, sourced all of the equipment, figured out a shooting schedule, got the pilot script modified to the 15 pages shot, found a director in you.
Clutch.
Yeah, and threw all together in 24 days. So that was me taking what I do for a job.
Yes.
And applying it to my hobby.
You know,
I definitely needed to break after that. If you might have noticed on set, Marcella.
It was an experience. You know, it's not like I've never had to do things on a tight budget and less time than normal to do it. I remember twice actually in my career in New York, the producers came to me two different shows and said something had happened to their show or whatever had taken place. Could I come in? One time it was, here's the set. We were going to do this show. We lost the rights to that show, but we had built the set. What show can you do on this set and mount it in 7 days? So I've been there, but as demanding as that was, and others, I did another 9 days with 11 actors in it. But I'm not trying to say that doing theater is easier necessarily. Anything under the gun and time pressure and time constraints, and you got to meet a schedule. I mean, that's life, that's life. But especially in the arts, there's always a schedule, there's a deadline. But I think when it's film, there's just a lot more collaboration and a lot more people involved, and we need to, you know, and you need to put schedules and people together and, you know, scenes, if you're in this scene but you're not in that scene, and how do we do the scenes out of order, all of that. Which brings me to, I'd like to talk a bit about also, Duffy isn't local to Charlottesville anyway, and he works in D.C.? Okay. And then let's talk about some of the other people who were involved. I mean, Corey, remind me of Corey's last name. Corey was, for all intents and purposes, our DP, but he was also in the movie. But tell me, Carolyn or Adarsh, I don't want to leave you out, Carolyn. Jump in, but let's talk about Corey a bit and the cast.
In an improv comedy group when I was at the University of Virginia. It's called The Weathermen. And I graduated and am an old fart now. But afterwards, there was a wave of really talented people that entered the group after I left, and one of them was Corey. And he is also an aspiring actor, writer, and is actually, he just contacted me a few weeks ago about getting a place out in L.A. So I think he just graduated.
Yes.
In May, and is coming straight out here as well. So he was a huge help to the process because he had access and knowledge to a lot of the professional, like, high-tech equipment. So he really came through at a time when we were scrambling and trying to find someone that would kind of take that over, and he definitely did.
Well, you know, a funny story about me. The first time Corey or Adarsh said to me, well, yes, we're going to shoot this on a camcorder. And I, artists, tell me, what was my response to that?
Yeah, I don't think camcorder was you were visualizing.
Yes.
I think you were thinking like a handheld cam.
Yes, and I, you know, and I didn't know what to say to that, but, you know, you guys were so impressive, so enthusiastic, passionate, all of that, but that's, that's not all. There was technical knowledge, and as I often said, and already on the show, and I've said to you many times, I loved learning new things, and I swore when I was your age, I would never tell someone younger than I am, oh, no, no, this can't be done, or that's impossible, or you need this. So even though Carolyn and Oddish and Corey, to a certain extent, Duffy, everyone was saying these things that seemed okay, all right, I'm going to go with this, and we did it. But I have to tell you, there were moments when I went, okay, this is a learning experience, but I mean, we did it. And I do not in this segment, but in the next segment, I want the two of you to tell the audience how much we did. In other words, walk us through it and the time frame and all the challenges for switching locations and all the things that happen normally in filmmaking, just not on a 3-day weekend.
Right.
But before we go in this segment, before we close out this segment, some of the other performers, how did you get the cast? Who were they? We know about Corey. He was in, did a very fine job in his role in the movie as well as behind the camera. And then I ended up shooting sometime, and that's something I haven't done since I left New York. That was fun. But, well, tell us about the cast. How did you meet them, and who are they, and what they did?
We set up a casting call. We knew it had to happen rather quickly.
Yes.
So we kind of scrambled one together, scrambled out kind of a breakdown of characters and what we were looking for, and we sent it to various departments, mainly the drama department at UVA.
Yes.
And again, the group that really pulled through or that we wound up casting a lot of people from was, again, the Weathermen, the improv group that I was in college. They just had a lot of interest in. I think a lot of people were trying to do this after school for a living. So we wound up casting calls were interesting. I know Oddish would meet the people, if he could, on ground at UVA and see them face-to-face and do readings. I did a lot of them via Skype technology.
Yes.
And there was a good amount of interest, and it was hard picking who we wanted, but then again, we were so happy with who we picked.
Yeah, I mean, it really was a great cast, and everybody, they were like sponges. They wanted to do anything I could think of, they were ready to try, and they jumped in.
Exactly.
And, you know, in relatively few takes, too, it got done. It was Alex, for instance, is one. He was so, I mean, everybody was grand. I guess, Oddish, you did a lot of the face-to-face casting, and I know at least with one cast member. Tell us about this, because when I got the script, it was one person, and then two people showed up who were equally good, you thought, and so it became two characters. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. So we had a part of the mafia film that was supposed to occur in two different scenes. Characters were interacting, two different sets of characters, and we had two people do readings. For the character, two guys do reading character, and both of them just brought something totally different to the character, but both of them were incredible. Luke and Ark, two guys. So what we ended up doing was taking that character, the character of Peter Russo, who's kind of a lieutenant of the main mafioso that was played by you, Alfie, and put him into another character that occurs later in the that kind of introduced rather later in the series in Billy Caturo. And had Billy Caturo take the first Peter Russo scene, and then had Peter Russo the second scene.
Yes.
So while we did add more characters, we felt like the additional layer of depth was just phenomenal from a storytelling standpoint, and really did just the vision that we had in our mind for the types of characters you need to show. So while in the final pilot that we will be shopping, those two characters are still just one. So this really does show the types of people that Alvy works with, and it made for a lot more stimulating of a visual and line delivery kind of an experience of this extended pilot/trailer in front of.
The funny because yeah, it worked out well. We had read Luke, and Honors and I both were like, "This guy is perfect."
Yes.
You know, he's tall. He's got the mafioso look. He's got the feet down. It was like perfect.
Luke really captured all of our hearts.
Yes.
Early on.
Yeah, he's a cutie. And
speaking strictly professionally, of course. Probably, yes. But he was fine actor. Good cinematic timing, I thought, too. Exceptional. So, in any case, there are lots of great cast members, a lot of whom wore more than one hat and wore them extremely well. It was an ensemble in every sense, and an exciting time for me. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. Stay with us. And my guests, Adarsh and Carolyn, screenwriters, hey, and UVA grads, we'll be right back, and good business coordinators and career people and lovers of models. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Teen angst is a well-worn topic in modern cinema. There's a good reason. An intriguing story geared to a younger audience has the potential to make a lot of money. But it's rare for a movie to pull off teen angst like The Kings of Summer, directed by Jordan Vogt Roberts. As another school year dissolves into summertime, young Joe Toy is fed up with his single father's treatment and runs away from home. He recruits his best friend Patrick and local oddball Biagio to help him build a house in the woods where they are free to do as they please, away from the iron grip of parents. The Kings of Summer is as enduring and funny as it is legitimately affecting, with beautiful cinematography reminiscent of Terrence Malick, crisp writing that captures the frustrations of our teen years, and top-notch acting across the board. Everyone from bit players like real-life husband and wife Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally to the very talented three young leads brings their A-game to the film, making each scene lively and meaningful. A coming-of-age story that redefines the boundaries of the genre. This one is a must-see for film fans of any age. The Kings of Summer. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices radio show. My guests today, Carolyn Murdoch and Adarsh Ramakrishnan, both University of Virginia graduates, both incredibly involved in professional careers and in coordinating time management, and now both with Patrick Duffy, screenwriters. And we had an interesting, how long ago? It seems now it's such a long time ago. Was it just April we did this?
Yeah, April. I know, because I got a speeding ticket on the way back. I just had driver's school for it.
Oh my God. Well, that makes it memorable. Okay. Yes, well, what we're talking about, in case you just joined us, is a new film project called Our Thing. And I call it a project, and that's just the usual thing you say. But this has really gone beyond that, because number one, a trailer for it has been requested. And as Carolyn and Adarsh know, and anyone else in the business, that is already a marvelous thing. That's a great place to begin. And because of that request, we got together, and I was very happy to be asked to direct it. And then I ended up also being Al D, the bad mafia guy, in the film. We had a wonderful cast that Adarsh and Carolyn chose, and camera people, and, you know, everyone wearing different hats and making it all happen in a very quick weekend, a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I think a Friday night we read it. Oh, speaking of Skype, which Carolyn mentioned last time, I have used Skype, but I'm still working my way into the 21st century technically. And there was the first read-through of my career where the leading lady was on Skype and all of that excitement.
Yeah, you were shocked.
I was shocked.
And
that was actually pretty funny to watch for
Kevin. And then there were two different guys playing what I had read as one guy, which we talked about last segment. And then there was a guy there reading who wasn't even in it, but he was very good. He was covering for someone. I mean, that was our Friday night read through.
Yeah, that was my roommate Ryan Donahue, who also filled in as a cameraman,
yes,
mic operator, line prompter, set decorator. Basically, everything. As the number of readers in him increased, the productivity and contribution seemed to increase as well. So.
And I think we have to say everyone did above and beyond the call of duty. Everybody, even your roommates who were having a party one night on the last night we shot, kept it down so we could get through. I mean, can you imagine a university party and they hold it down so you can make a movie? I mean, I love it. Anyway, I do want to go through some of, from your point of view, Carolyn, and your point of view, Adarsh, and my point of view, too, I guess, as the director. But actually, what we did, how we did it, and, you know, and we shot through the day. The biggest thing for me, which I think all of us handled extremely well, was being presented with a location problem at the last minute and having to go, okay, where can we shoot these two scenes? And then coming up with it as I think amazingly quickly, and then just shooting it like it. And you know what? It fit. And I'm talking specifically about, well, also my outdoor scene, which was really Corey's idea, but I was talking specifically about turning the stock room or your dining room into a stock room in a basement of a bar and pulling it off.
We're actually in the process of moving out of the house that we shot it at, which is, you know, the house that Brian and I live in with three other people.
You're going to put up a plaque, our thing shot here?
And pardon?
Are you going to put up a plaque, our thing was shot here,
2015? Yeah, the house was condemned before then. About that stock room, actually. So one of the items that we were, of course, trying to figure out where it'll go is the rack.
Yes.
That we, for that stock room prop, which, as you identified earlier, it was a scramble getting everything set up for this screenplay from the set to preparing the actual scenes themselves. And a lot of it happened that Friday, where Patrick came down actually Thursday night. And then Friday, he spent the whole day shopping, working on the screenplay, and setting things up.
Yes.
So we told him, all right, we need a metal rack, something, you know, like you'd find in a pantry or in a garage that we can set up so it looks more like a stock room.
Yes.
So rather than going to Home Depot and picking up one of those cheap aluminum, you know, $10 racks, we hightailed it to Bed Bath & Beyond.
Oh, God.
We dropped $80 for a nice artisanal,
yes,
coffee.
Well, it worked.
It worked beautifully. Yes. Now we have an $80 rack.
Yes.
Really. Well, I'm going to piggyback off this and say, make me an offer if any listeners want to buy it. But yeah, it was an interesting experience, to say the least, getting everything set up and turning what is traditionally our above-ground dining room,
yes,
that's very well lit and clearly not a basement, into something that actually looks fairly close to a basement.
Yes.
Which really, really surprised me, but that once again was a combination of very, very meticulous set work by Duffy and also having Corey kind of come in and play with the lighting and the camera angles in conjunction with you, of course.
Yes.
And really use that Hollywood magic to show exactly what we wanted in the room, to convince people that the room was not what it actually is.
See, that was one of my favorite parts about it. Again, it's not it's certainly not the first time I've been handed a situation where, okay, so plan A is not going to be, and you don't have time to stand around and talk about, okay, plan A, gee, that was a great plan. You just, boom, plan A is gone, now plan B. And to change in your head to erase from your head what you had planned to shoot and how you'd planned to shoot it and go, okay, now this needs to be this. But frankly, I think the last minute change in the location and deciding to make the dining room the stock room in the basement, it worked. I mean, it worked so well for the scene. It seemed to work for the actors better. You know, again, Alex and his line readings and as the technocrat, if you will, who thought he could speak to the mafia any way he wished and they would listen. And of course, the response of is it Luke who was that?
Yes. If Luke had spread his arms completely, he would have taken up the entire.
Exactly.
Which added an additional layer of comedy for sure.
Exactly, and moving them around. Of course, you can do that with camera because you set up the shots. But I think it was incredibly effective by everyone, from Corey's lighting, from the direction, from the actors, from the blocking that had just used what the space that we had in a way that. Made it up, so it had a little mysterious air to it. But what do you think, Carolyn? I mean, we had to, I don't know if we had to switch any locations on you, did we?
No, I was going to say, I was not there for that whole fiasco. Yeah. I was deep in REM sleep upstairs.
Yeah. Carolyn was fast asleep.
I was, yes.
Oh,
back
yes.
In my beauty rest.
That's true. We, as much as we were shooting, when people weren't shooting, I don't blame them for having to take naps. But I know we did the outdoor scene, which had its challenges, which, by the way, just to mention again how much I love learning about new things, I do radio shows, such as I'm doing here, and I do the post-production, the editing, all of that, no problem. I've worked with audio editing, and of course, as a director, I've sat in to direct the editors on what to do for the film. But when Arish and Corey were talking about how quickly this could be done, the editing, the post-production of it, I was tempted to go, I don't know, but I sat there, tell us, Ardish, how, and then pass it on to Carolyn for what she did after to make the rough cut, how this 21st century technology that seems so, that is, so natural, so secondhand to you guys, I sat there and I thought, wow, no wonder they can do this. Look what they can do with these computers now. So I'm not, but tell us, Arish, first of all, how we pulled together, we pulled the shots, I know, but we couldn't have done it as quickly as we did without your computer expertise. So tell us something about that.
Well, I don't think we can chalk this up to expertise as much as we can chalk this up to resourcefulness on my part, just because no specific program was used.
Yes.
We just used a file name convention. So I set up a folder directory structure just using the normal file explorer on my computer.
Uh-huh.
And then we actively went through each clip and then sorted all the good ones into the good folder and deleted all the bad ones. And we did this scene by scene.
Yes.
So really, the work that we did was much more selecting the clips than
Yes.
any sort of technical cleaning of the clips or any sort of work there. Of course, while viewing the clips, we did play with some cropping and we did play with some sound adjustments
Yes.
just to get an idea if some of the takes were usable or not.
Exactly.
And for that, we didn't use the free software VLC. But yeah, once we got the clips selected, so we knew which takes we were going to use for which scene,
mm-hmm.
I took a screenshot of the scene names
uh-huh.
and sent that to Carolyn.
Yes.
And then from there, Carolyn can give you an idea about the heavy lifting that she did, which really,
yes.
this is what got us our visual. So
yes.
She's kind of the star here. So Carolyn, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, you guys sat down and looked through like 5 hours of footage and gave me the best scene. So like, you did the, it's different skills, but
yes.
Thank you for doing that. That made my job so much easier. When it did come time to put the scenes together, I can immediately just go like, okay, I have these 5 takes. These are the best ones. I know that. What do we got? So yeah, it's an interesting process. We want to put the separate scenes together and then pull from that, a nice little trailer that we can send out along with our script.
So again, to remind everyone, the audience, that we started out with a 39-page script. We shot sort of a mini pilot, if you will, all the while knowing that the producer writers wanted to take from that a trailer, and that's what we ended up with to answer the request from California. Okay, what's next? That's the big question everyone's asking. What's next for our thing? What do you think?
Oh, network.
Big thing!
Network and cable television prime time slot.
Yeah.
Emmys, Golden Globes, the usual.
Uh-huh.
Somehow this puts my company on the map, right, Carolyn?
Exactly. What are you here for?
Yeah, so we become the next Harry Weinstein. All joking aside, I think that our immediate goal is to finish cutting this trailer. We've got a rough cut of it, which we've, you know, to people, and our next step is to refine it, and then once we have something that we really like, send it out to a sound editor to smooth.
Sure.
And then after that, it's selling. It's all about getting out there, meeting the right people, making those connections. And putting this in front of the right networks, kind of going back to some people that requested to see more in March, and then showing them, hey, we got a lot more. You know, you guys were looking for sketches.
Yes.
We have a pilot.
Yes.
And after that, I think it's a bit of a waiting game. Just from doing research in this industry, it takes a while to sell, and it takes a while for a screenplay to get picked up. So just waiting.
Yeah.
And stay patient. Is that about right, Carolyn?
Yeah. If anyone's out there listening to this and they're interested, give us a call.
You know, before we run out of time, why don't you let people know how they can communicate with you, either to see the trailer when it's finished, or, you know, there are angels out there. There are people looking for new work. Tell us, how do we get in touch with our thing to be of assistance, or at least to see it?
Why don't you take that one?
Oh, boy. I was about to say contact Carolyn.
I was going to say, contact me.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that we'll have a little bit more of an internet footprint.
Okay.
Once we finish the trailer, so we'll have an IMDb listing at the very least.
Okay.
In the interim, if anybody is interested in getting in touch with us, Marcello, you've posted basic information about Carolyn and I on the website. You can connect with us through LinkedIn.
Okay.
Connect with us on any of Carolyn's social media accounts, so Twitter or Instagram. And I don't really do social media, so I don't have any of those.
I'm always here. Yeah, I'm Google. It's hard to miss me.
Yeah. Not being cocky or anything, right, Carolyn?
Oh, no, not offers, yeah, no, just, it's not always a good thing.
I would say between those two methods, that would be the easiest way to learn more about our thing and get in touch with the creative team.
Okay. All right. And now, again, before we go, because we are getting close out of time, but give us at least one favorite moment, one thing that stands out in the experience for you that was perhaps the most positive, Carolyn.
Oh, that's first?
Yes, you first.
For me, this is my first time at seeing something that I've written, like, professionally produced.
Uh-huh.
So I think it will always have a warm spot in my heart
yes.
in that regard.
That's true. First time's always the best. And you...
It's a magical thing.
Exactly. And you, Arish, what stood out for you?
Oh, man. The whole process, the whole month of April, this past
yes.
April, was kind of marked by preparing for this. So the entire process, I think, will be something that I always look fondly back on as both a really, really great learning experience and a very, very fun exercise with a part of my brain that I don't always get to use. being on set, just watching this thing come together after weeks of preparation, and ironically, the actual shooting of the movie is where I was needed the least, which is how I planned it, which is also why I finished the entire case of beer on set.
Yeah.
in true Hollywood fashion, so I think that will forever be That's a very fortunate time.
Well, I have to say that, you know, in addition to writing, you and Carolyn, you really did function as a professional producer artist. I mean, I've been involved in smaller productions where directing, I had to also take on the producer's hat, and that was not the case here. You clearly knew, and I could turn to you for various things that were happening and the things we set up. And again, to remind everyone, all of this was done in minutes as opposed to an hour to sit around and talk about it. We had to make a decision and go with it. And everyone was doing that. And I'll tell you, my most favorite memory of this experience is that I was able not to say, oh, we can't do that fast. I just went with you guys. I did my job. All of you did your job. And I marveled, as you know, when we wrapped, at how much was accomplished. Good work by everyone, every cast member, everyone, and doubling as production team. And of course, I even learned how to use writer duet. I'd never done that before. And you know, and Carolyn on Skype rolling around chewing gum on her bed. I don't know what. And still doing the read through. I mean, it was all a tremendous 21st century experience technically, but also artistically, the sense of ensemble and everyone pulling together and just making it work constantly. You know, it's not like it was a piece of cake. We made it work. We just made it work. Okay, I guess if you have any parting words, now's the time to say them. I welcome them.
I think Carolyn, Duffy, and I would all like to thank everyone that got involved with this. Alexander, Anna,
yes.
Korn, Lucy, Luke, Art, basically Brian, everyone that kind of pitched in, helped out, made this thing happen.
Yes.
Am I missing anyone there, Carolyn?
Oh my gosh, well,
no,
I don't think so.
Well, we've just proven, as anyone in film knows, film is a collaboration, and it was a big-time collaboration with multi-hats and all that. Thank you so very much to my guests today, Carolyn and Artish, the writers and producers, along with Patrick Duffy, who are writers producers of Our Thing. Look for it. It's going places. It is hysterically funny. And a most collaborative piece of genius. So that's it for us today. Glad you tuned in to us and hope you enjoyed the show. The three of us certainly did. Right, guys?
Oh, we sure did.
Okay.
Thanks all for having us. My pleasure. Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. Bye now and best to you.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. We have expressed frustration that such a fine actress as Jennifer Aniston is so often wasted on empty roles. We recognize that she is often the only redemption of her dollar-driven vehicles, but we know from her fine indie efforts in The Good Girl and Friends with Money that she can handle weightier fare. After a long dry period, along comes Cake, to remind us of her considerable talent. This is a small film that explores the almost impossible nature of recovery after a devastating loss. Aniston plays Claire, once a driven professional, who now lives in extraordinary emotional and physical pain resulting from a car accident, which has left her broken, scarred, and unable to cope with the death of her son. She lives on painkillers as she goes through the motions of recovery while contemplating a way out. Rich supporting efforts saturate Cake with humor and heart, including Adriana Barraza as Claire's loyal housekeeper who elevates this film measurably, and Anna Kendrick as her role model who has preceded Claire in suicide. Cake is by no means a happy film. Still, loss as a universal aspect of life is worth exploring. Here, with humor, heart, and fine acting. Brava, Jennifer. Cake, not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, here with my pets and pet peeves, hoping you'll join me in a wake-up cup of coffee. Beating the memory lane crowd. Now that turkeys shop before Black Friday, it's not surprising that some media personality shows are rushing into 2013 year-end memories before it's even Christmas Eve. Most of us know memories recapture us and replay in the twinkling of an eye, an aromatic breeze, a squeeze of the shoulder, or in the moment of that burned taste after a fire. Faster than a mouse-clicked link, you're back to that owl in the woods. First kiss, wedding day, first shared Christmas tree, or moment of silence. Memories take us back to rain on a tin roof, our car driving us the long way home, an uncle's cackle, fireplace crackling, an aunt's snowing smile, grandma's special homemade icing, barking dogs, parents independently slipping a few 20s into your palm, and there you are, back at the beginning of the roller coaster ride, inhaling all of a teenager's unknowns, smelling the sweets before tasting the bitter, the sound of the wind and the chilly feel of snow in our face, blowing hair backwards and propelling dreams forward. Imagine Utah, Colorado, and Virginia easing toward cuddling up to justice and equality for all, despite some being drag-queened forward, kicking and screaming in their red boots. When friends share memories with me, I remember who, what, and why I celebrate in life. Mostly it's lifelong friends, Lance and Pamela, Mercedes McCambridge, or newcomers, Boomy, Bill, Daniel, and Michelle. Chance meetings on the streets of New York City, like hailing a cab for Carol Channing. A chatty stroll with Colleen Dewhurst, James Whitmore, and Tommy Toon. A gracious nod from passing Glenn Close and Tony Randall. Quite literally running into Nathan Lane and Jack Lemmon. Jane Alexander's thank you, an answered note from Julie Harris, telephone chats with Celeste Holm, book signing with Pavarotti, supervising Juilliard students during an invited-only rehearsal of Placido Domingo's Met conducting debut, and a moment backstage at Ford's Theater with Rosalind Russell. The point is not name-dropping, or tears during Oscar night memorials, or even how much I miss Peter O'Toole, who I never met, or Mom, who I'll never forget. The point is, every moment is a memory in the making, and every one a reason for celebration, and 'tis the season every day, in every way.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of The Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.